We've been talking a lot about basketball. It's kind of occupied our morning, but there is a huge, huge baseball series kicking off this weekend, tonight, as a matter of fact, between our Vols and the Kentucky Wildcats, the Batcats, as they call them up in Lexington. And who knew that they were going to be such a highly regarded team nationally when this series rolled around. So it's time to talk about that a little bit, and we've got just the guy to do it. Jack Foster, who is a member of the team at Rocky Top Insider, but also a member of the team at Omaha Productions. And Jack is someone, just to give a little context here, during the NCAA basketball tournament, he was, of course, paying attention to what the Vols were doing in basketball. But while Shumpert and Butler were doing their thing with the tournament, Jack was way deep into baseball coverage. He is, and I would argue, out of the RTI team, he's as well-versed on that baseball team as any of the boys. And he'll be obviously paying close attention to this weekend series against Kentucky. Jack, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Bob. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about you. Again, you've seen the team up close and personal. You've been paying attention to that. It's well chronicled going into this series against Kentucky, kind of a tale of two cities. You've got, you know, kind of a smash and pound team with Tennessee, and then Kentucky's success has been more small ball, a lot of running, a lot of base stealing, etc. How do you see this series sizing up, and what would you consider to be success for the Vols to, you know, come away with? Obviously a sweep would be wonderful, but realistically, is it, you know, is it a 2-1, or, you know, is, I guess my question, other question too, is Kentucky record's amazing, but how real is it?
Well, I think if you go 14-1 through at the halfway point of SEC play, that's real. I know that they have not technically played an SEC team up to this point that, as of right now as we speak, has a winning record in the league. So maybe there's a slight asterisk on 14-1, but if you go 14-1 in the SEC, you're dang good. So I think it's pretty legit and very impressive, and they've definitely been a top five SEC team up to this point. As for the series, I think the hope for Tennessee should be to win the series. I do think they are more talented and a better team, but on the road and a pitcher-friendly park is what Kentucky has. That doesn't bode well necessarily for Tennessee. You know, I think that the expectation for Kentucky fans and for Kentucky should be to win the series. So to me, it's a true coin flip. I think it could go either way. It's just going to depend on, can Tennessee continue to hit home runs at a high rate, which is what they've done all season. They're going to have to. And on the flip side, defensively, they got probably have to play their best weekend as a whole defensively. And we've seen them be better defensively this year than they have been, especially last year. But, you know, there's still some holes defensively, and they're still not perfect. So I do think Kentucky will still be able to steal bases at a high rate and to be able to run well. But the pressure's on for Tennessee defensively this weekend.
Tennessee minus 156 on the money line tonight. So they are favored in game one on the early lines that have came out this morning. Jack, you talked about just a little bit there at the end of your answer, but Kentucky, it seems like their identity offensively is they're going to run and put pressure on Tennessee and put pressure on everyone when it comes to base pass and trying to steal bases. How could Tennessee handle that defensively? Do you have confidence that they'll be able to, you know, with the catcher being able to get the ball down and throw runners out? Because that's something we've struggled with in Knoxville, you know, the last couple of years.
It is something they struggled with, but the catcher that's been the best at preventing those kinds of things is Cal Stark, and I would expect Cal Stark to start all three games this weekend. There's really no reason he shouldn't. He is the best catcher defensively, and he's been better offensively than Cannon Peebles, who
that's
has been
crazy.
Really underwhelming
yeah.
this year. Yeah, who'd have thought we'd be here, right, where Cannon Peebles, I think, is hitting like 0.75 in SEC play. It's something absurd.
0.71, really, I believe, is what it is.
0.71, there you go. So I knew it was close in that range. But, yeah, so I would expect Cal Stark to start all three games. He's got to bring it this weekend. I think you should have confidence in him. But just, you know, pitchers have never been great about in the Frank Anderson era. That's the one hit on them is keeping guys put, right? So I think the pressure's up there. And I like I said, I think it's just an inevitability that Kentucky will be able to run well. It's just you kind of have to keep them at bay, and really it's just up to the pitchers to be to kind of have a weekend like they did last weekend, which is to just keep guys off base and to have a really strong weekend. And they're rolling with the same rotation they did last weekend. If they can keep the momentum going, then I would expect good things to come out of it.
Jack, you know, it's a Kentucky team that I think is ideally wanting those starters to go deep into those games. I don't think that they are, you know, necessarily wanting their bullpen to have long outings kind of in this series. And Tennessee's done a good job of getting into some bullpens here so far this season. Is Tony Vitello and this staff, has that kind of been a point of emphasis this week, just knowing that they've got some high-level starters but maybe not the deepest bullpen kind of on that back end?
Yeah, I think that's always the hope. And, you know, the Kentucky pitching staff, they don't have any – it's just solid is the word I would use. They don't really have any prospects that are going to completely wow you. They got a couple of good bullpen arms, and as you mentioned, the starters are strong. But, you know, that's the hope for Tennessee any weekend is to chase the starters as soon as possible. And they've been largely successful at that for the most part outside of a couple of games. So, yeah, that's going to be the hope. And, you know, it's kind of a theme with SEC teams across the league, unless you're Arkansas, is that the bullpens are pretty shallow for the most part for most teams. So, yeah, that's going to be the hope as always is to try and chase the starter as soon as you can, and we'll see how it shakes out.
Is it fair to say that this series, maybe not a must win, that feels a little steep, but like when you project Tennessee trying to get in that top eight to host a super regional, right now Tennessee holding on, I believe, at number 7 in the baseball RPI, this feels almost like a must win series for Tennessee in that regard. When you look at some of the teams they're chasing and competing with, combined with the schedule upcoming for Tennessee.
It's hard to say it's a must win at this point just because of how great Kentucky's been. And if you can take one, it's not an eyesore on Tennessee's schedule by any means if you win one game in Lexington, considering how good Kentucky has been. So I may push back a little bit on must win. I would say that if you lose this one, maybe the Vandy series here in a couple of weeks is a must win, or even the Florida one, considering how mediocre they have been. They definitely need to win two of these three road series, I think, to have a good chance of hosting or being a top eight seed in the end, as you said. So Vandy, Florida, Kentucky, you know, Vandy and Florida are obviously talented. Maybe Florida for sure has been underwhelming this year, but all three of those teams are really good. If you can win two of those three series, I think they'll be in a good spot. So with Kentucky on paper being the most challenging as of right now, I don't necessarily know if I consider it a must-win.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think Tennessee needs to get at least one this weekend. But winning this series, I think, maybe puts you where you feel solidified in the top eight. Maybe that's the way I should phrase it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's a whole new ballgame, no pun intended, for Tennessee baseball moving forward. It's like they are firmly stamped in that top three in the country if they're able to take two here in Lexington.
I don't want to say anything here, but I'm just looking. Your boy Shumpert has Kentucky winning 2 out of 3. Not very happy about that.
Oh, Ryan, what are you doing to me? Jack, do you agree with that? Do you have Kentucky taking the series? Oh, no. What are you doing?
I actually don't. I think Tennessee's going to win the series this weekend. And like I said, it's a coin flip. My thing about Tennessee on the road, and it's a trend that I've noticed a little bit so far this season, is last year they were not good on the road. This year, I don't get that sense. I feel like they've been almost the same team. I know they lost 2 in Tuscaloosa, but they should have won that series. I mean, it was in their hands. It was right on the tip of their fingers, and they just couldn't, you know, get it done in the end there in the final innings on day 3. I think they played well in Tuscaloosa. I think they played well in Auburn outside of night 1 when all that happened was A.J. Causey got rocked. So I think Tennessee's played pretty well. They played well in Arlington. So on the road, I have no worries really about this Tennessee team, whereas last year I had a ton of worries. So, you know, if the weather's bad, that's obviously going to play in Kentucky's favor. I mentioned the park plays in Kentucky's favor, but Tennessee's just so hot right now. And they arguably have the most momentum they've had in SEC play now. You know, they haven't had as much momentum as they have now in SEC play coming off the sweep of LSU. So I think vibes are high, and I think the train's going to keep on rolling. I do not think they sweep. That would be pretty surprising to me. But with what the pitching showed me last weekend and the fact they're going with the same rotation, the same plan, I do think Tennessee is able to win two in Lexington this weekend.
I will say, Jack, on our RTI thread, when we're picking winners for basketball games, et cetera, not so much baseball, but Jack's usually one of the eternal optimists, so I applaud him for that. So that's good. Real quick, and it's just a footnote to what you said about I'm kind of a weather guy. These guys will tell you that. I talk about it a fair amount. I do think when you go a little bit north, even though, you know, there's no rain or anything in the forecast tonight, but, you know, when it's in the high 50s, that feels it cuts differently up there than it does here.
Well, that's something Tennessee struggled with, you know, yeah, during their 21 season, 22 season? Those years were running together. The year they were so good, they went to Kentucky and actually lost that series. And it was just, I remember how cold and brutal the weather was, and I feel like that did kind of play into that.
Yeah.
Jack, you know, it's been about a month now since we've seen A.J. Russell, and I know, you know, this coaching staff isn't going to rush him back with that being a second time he's gotten hurt. But can you, you know, if you've heard anything on that status, can you talk a little bit about that with just how important these series are coming up? And then, you know, also just kind of piggybacking off of that, can you talk about, you know, just the consistency that Xander Seacrest has kind of brought in that Sunday role with, you know, with Stamos being able to kind of slide into that Friday spot now. And it seems like you've kind of patched it in together now in his absence.
Yeah, I think Tennessee's done a good job, you know, making it work without A.J. Russell. Of course, the pitching staff's never going to reach its ceiling unless A.J. Russell is healthy and, you know, pumping gas on the mound. But as far as A.J. Russell's status, I would not expect him to come back, you know, really anytime soon. Super soon. I do think he'll be able to, you know, contribute in the postseason, whether that's in a starting role, TBD, but I do think he'll be back by the postseason. Of course, that's all up in the air. That's nothing official. That's just kind of the vibes I've gotten. And Xander Seacrest has probably been the most surprising part of this team for me, considering he's been the midweek starter ever since I've been on the beat. And you saw early in the season when he was given that opportunity to have some significant innings as a weekend starter, he struggled against Baylor, and he struggled even against UAlbany, I believe, a little bit. Or maybe it was Bowling Green, got a little beat up there in the back half of the game. So when he got the ball against Ole Miss, it was his first SEC start of his career. He was used as an opener, did a fine job getting about 6-7 outs, I believe. And then the next weekend he started against Georgia. I was like, okay, considering what Georgia has done to A.J. Cosby and Drew Beam in back-to-back nights, this could get ugly. I did not have a lot of confidence going into that game. But Xander Seacrest shoved in six innings, allowing no runs and four hits. So that really, you know, changed the narrative, I think, for Seacrest. And he's continued to change the narrative with a strong performance in Auburn, rebounding well after giving up three early runs. And then last week against LSU, providing another great SEC start. So that's two great SEC starts from Xander so far. I think he's, you know, earned himself the right of being called a solid, legit SEC starter, and there's no reason Tennessee should take him out of the rotation anytime soon. I think he's, you know, earned himself that role, and it's, like I said, it's been a pleasant surprise for this Tennessee baseball team.
So, Jack, I always pay close attention to live updates and everything that you provide on RTI. Are you going to be manning that station again for the weekend?
Absolutely. Won't be in Lexington, but we'll have the update thread up and running for all three games. Got your starting lineups, your pitching matchups, a little preview at the top, and, of course, an at-bat-by-at-bat thread, super detailed, like I like it. So it's everything you need to follow along in this Tennessee baseball game, so it's perfect.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you being on that wall, so to speak, and also give a quick follow because you're one of the hardest working guys in the business from my perspective. Obviously, you're part of the RTI team, but where else can folks follow you on X and whatnot?
Yeah, at Jack Foster Media on X. I actually heard from this podcast I listen to all the time one of the analysts on the pod combined Twitter and X to call it Twix. And I think that's brilliant. So I've been calling it Twix as of late, plus huge Twix fan, favorite candy bar. So best of both worlds there. But yeah, at Jack Foster Media on Twix, Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. And of course, at RockyTopInsider.com for all baseball coverage needs this weekend.
I feel like that's a bad take, Jack, Twix being your favorite. I mean, it's your personal preference. I can't argue that, but I feel this might be the first time I've ever heard someone say Twix is their favorite candy bar.
Ooh, Twix is tasty.
Really?
Yeah,
dude, Twix is Twix on top for sure. I mean, Snickers is great. When I used to walk golf courses in high school, Snickers was my go-to because it gave me more energy, but Twix is still my favorite candy bar.
Jack, appreciate it. Thanks for hopping on with us.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Y'all have a good Friday.
Thank you, buddy.
You as well. Snickers bar always too veiny for me. I didn't like it.
Well, what do you like then?
Reese's Cup, man. The GOAT. Hershey bar.
Hershey bar.
Hershey bar.
What a joke.
Wow.
A joke. Yeah, I know, man. Milk chocolate's just so disgusting.
Yeah. Chocolate on its own.
Who just likes milk chocolate? That's so disgusting.
Hershey bar is the most like vanilla. You
probably like toast a lot too, right?
Do you know what probably is the most popular ice cream flavor in the world? Probably vanilla or chocolate, the two things that you would call average. You don't need to spice up classics. It's milk chocolate.
You have like a wall of candy in front of you and you're give me the milk chocolate Hershey's bar.
No, I say give me a Reese's cup and I say give me a Kit Kat, the two goats.
Okay, that's better answer.
Like, you're coming at me with Twix. Bar. Well, like a Kit Kat does everything the Twix does except better.
You can't drag the Twix through the mud and be like, oh, I like a Hershey's bar.
Oh, well, yes, I can because, again, milk chocolate, while it might be basic, is kind of the whole point of candy is the nice milk chocolate. Name me a good candy without milk chocolate. Name me a good chocolate bar that isn't milk chocolate, Sam.
They all have other elements to them for a reason. Well, nobody has milk chocolate on its own.
Well, you know why? Because they can't sell the same damn bar every time. You have to have some weirdos that want a little bit of a different
nobody
taste.
Would buy it.
Now give me a Three Musketeers. I need me a little coconut there. Give me some of that.
It's not in a Three Musketeers.
The Hershey bar stays in business because the milk chocolate is so great. If it wasn't great, they wouldn't offer the milk chocolate anymore because they got all these other inventions. But you know what? They keep coming back to the original. But don't get me wrong. Reese's is the best. Kit Kat's 2. Hershey bar 3.
You like Hershey Kisses?
Who doesn't like Hershey Kisses? Although I will say, Bob, I got to be honest, every now and then I do get tired of having to unpeel them.
Too much work.
But a good king-size Hershey bar, that's probably why I'd never had the makings of a varsity athlete growing up. I like too many of the king-size Hershey bars, which are now apparently like $3 a piece. What the hell are we doing here in this society?
I will say the Hershey bar is a little drab for me, but a Nestle's Crunch bar, now that is...
I'm with you, Bob.
That's, oh, my God.
Some texture.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to sit here and tell me the Hershey's bar isn't good, but that you like the Crunch bars?
Some texture.
Yeah.
I need a little rice in my chocolate bar.
A little texture.
Hershey must think it works. They do the crackle.
That's fine, but those haven't reached the same level of success. So, I mean, again, I'm okay with options. I'm okay with the people that need little sprinkles on their ice cream and need to throw some berries and stuff
just
on it.
Just the fact that that's your option.
But when it comes time for two scoops, when it comes time for two scoops of ice cream, just give me a good chocolate. Nothing will beat a good chocolate cone.
That's fine.
A basic
chocolate
is
bar is criminal.
I want rice patties in mine. If you mention the Crunch bar, we only really acknowledge real chocolate eaters really only acknowledge the Bunch of Crunch, Bob. Make them little bite-sized little bites. Then the Crunch bar
is good. Yeah.
Then the Crunch bar goes to a different level. But no one respectfully should be getting just a Crunch bar.
Bunch of Crunch is good movie.
Yeah, you got to get the Bunch of Crunch. That's what real chocolate eaters eat. Mm-hmm. Get out of here. I'm so blown away that we got some snobs over here that are then trying to praise the Crunch bar. I've heard it all now. A crackle. He hit me with a crackle after that.
Yeah, Mr. Good Bar. I could get behind a Mr. Good Bar, but a Hershey's chocolate bar is like, I don't know, man.
Delicious.
I'm
simple
a candy
and delicious.
Guy more than a chocolate guy, but just a plain Hershey's bar. I would if somebody gifted me a plain Hershey's bar, I would tell them to just like keep it for themselves.
On the note of candy, you know what is the hottest
hottest candy commodity right now. And I mean, you got like Scott Van Pelt talking about it. You got Matt Jones talking about it. Are the Nerds gummy clusters? Have you had them?
Mm-hmm. Pretty solid.
They are. Pretty solid. I only got turned on to them because my daughter got some, yeah. And I was like, okay, man, that's
pretty solid.
I have to admit, I'm buying a bag every once in a while, mm-hmm. for me, not for anyone else. They're amazing.
I haven't tried them, I don't think.
Got to try them.
You're not a candy guy? Just that.
I'm a chocolate guy.
Just that classic Hershey's.
Yeah, I'm a chocolate guy. And again, Hershey's not my number one, but it's my number three. It's my number three. It's top three. Reese and Kit Kat, one and two.
That would be like my number seven choice of chocolate, I think.
Okay.
Kit Kat's up there, though. It's good. Yeah. Twix, what I like is Twix is diversifying, too. They have various versions of Twix.
They tricked you guys with the whole left Twix, right Twix thing. No. The marketing campaign. You guys are like, oh, I've got to figure out which one's better, left or right. They got you. You guys.
No,
just...
they've got peanut butter, though. They got salted caramel. Who else
got peanut butter? Reese's Cups.
Reese's Cups aren't even the best brand of Reese's. Like, if you take five, it's better than a Reese's Cup.
You're an idiot.
Is good. That's really good.
It's good. It's not better than Reese's Cups.
Whatchamacallit's pretty good, too.
You guys are just naming candy now. I can name candy too, but everything you've named.
It's all better than your list.
It's not. It's really, truly not. And I bet if we look at the sales of candy, I'm going to look up chocolate bar sales.
Obviously, Hershey chocolate bars sell.
Yeah, you know why they sell? It's for s'mores. That's why.
You know why they use them in s'mores? Because they're delicious. No. Why don't they use Twix in s'mores? Because no one wants them.
Nobody's going to the gas station and just grabbing a Hershey's bar off the rack and be like, I'm going to eat this thing straight up.
Well, you know, I will yield that growing up, the regular Hershey bar didn't hit the same as the king size. I did prefer the king size because it's a little bit thicker. But yeah, I picked up a Hershey bar. When I was in Detroit, I was in there and I needed a little pick me up in the morning. I got me some Gatorade and I got me a Hershey bar.
What are you, 6 years old? I needed a pick me up.
I mean, sometimes.
Candy bar.
Okay, first of all, adults need pick me ups all the time. Have you ever heard of coffee? Like, that's what the concept
get a
of coffee.
Don't get a chocolate bar.
The concept of coffee is built around needing a pick me up, Sam. So don't call me a kid for needing a pick me up because adults do it every damn day,
your
sometimes multiple times in
bar.
The day.
Your pick me up can't be a chocolate bar.
Well, it can and it was. It can and it was.
Last question. Do you like dark chocolate?
I've been known to dabble.
have to like dark chocolate if you're stand for milk chocolate.
Yeah.
Because you're just a chocolate guy at that point.
Well, no. I mean, I prefer the milk chocolate to the dark chocolate.
No, that's fine. But you have to like dark a little bit.
I'll buy like, you know, these Hershey's. They had a nice little variety pack. It'd be like the original OG. Oh, man, the milk chocolate Hershey, like logs. I'm talking about the logs, like little, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
They'd be those, the silver ones, so great, so delicious. And then they'd mix in a little one with, like, had caramel in it, and then another one that was another, like, just the dark chocolate ones. The dark chocolate ones were my least favorite of the three, but I would still eat them. Dark chocolate's not really my thing.
I like dark chocolate. You got.
You guys just aren't good chocolate eaters, it seems like.
Hey, you've got one ally on the Crunch and Munch. My wife is, like, Crunch and Munch all the way.
You got to get the crunch, the bunch of crunch. Wow. The bunch of crunch.
Crunch and Munch is like the popcorn thing, isn't it?
Yeah. You throw I don't do that. I don't like it because then it melts in the popcorn, and I don't like my hands being melty. I've done it before, and like
people
I like
throw it in popcorn?
I mean, I have before.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that either.
People do that. It melts, mm-hmm. and then it gets all melty, and I don't like my – I like my popcorn dry. I like my chocolate intact. I put my chocolate in their fridge.
Some people put – like their candy in their chocolate, in their popcorn at the movie.
Yeah,
I think that's disgusting.
Yeah, like I got no issue with mixing food. Like when you see me with a plate of biscuits and gravy, I'm just slopping it up like a pig and just squealing as I eat it. And you know, like the French fry and the frosty, I've been known to do that plenty of times. But like, I don't need the chocolate and the popcorn. I want my chocolate cold.
M&M's in the popcorn, not a bad vibe. That's all right.
I can agree with you on refrigerated chocolate.
We
can end it. We can.
You couldn't be wrong about it.
There.
You couldn't be wrong about everything, Sam. You eventually had to find a. You eventually had to stumble into a right take. Let's go to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach?
Just last thing, you know, just last thing. Apparently Snickers, the highest selling candy bar in the world.
That doesn't surprise me.
They're not counting Reese as a candy bar in this scenario.
Really?
Not to what I found.
It's
I'm finding
not a bar.
I'm following Snickers. Snickers, 400 million in annual sales. It says number two. Crazy since nobody likes it. The Hershey bar, $300 million in sales. It's crazy since it's so gross that no one likes it. Then it would be number two, 400 million or 380.
$80 more million.
Kit Kat. Don't act like you were just like beating the drum for Snickers either, by the way. You don't get to take just the top ranking one. Kit Kat comes in third. Twix, fourth. Three Musketeers, fifth. But like I told you that Snickers gets credit for $380 million. According to this Google search, it says this number seems really high, but like it says that the Reese cups sell $2 billion a year. So like, you know, five times as much.
That's crazy.
As usual.
Right? We're fat. Yeah.
As usual, it's the things you don't expect to trigger the engagement that trigger the engagement. If you go on the 37 Club Morning Show Discord account, there is a lot of feedback. And it's not good for the Hershey bar, by the way.
I don't care what the people say. That's the thing about me is I have my takes and I don't need confirmation. I don't care if the audience agrees because I know my truth. And the numbers speak for themselves. And I acknowledge the Snickers are very popular. The Snickers are good. They're just not for me. They're too veiny. They're too veiny in the shape and I don't like mixing it and I just don't want it in there. But the Hershey bar, why is it number two in sales, man? Why is it number two in sales if one's buying it?
It's been around the longest.
If I was saying all time, Sam, maybe that would actually make sense for you to say. But we're talking about annually. Every year it resets, man.
My biggest point is just that if you've got your assortment of chocolate or candy in front of you, Hershey bar should be like one of your last picks.
Well, yes, if you have four picks and you have a Reese cup and a Kit Kat there, yes, Hershey should be one of your last picks for sure. I concur.
I think I would walk out of a gas. Like if I went into a gas station looking for candy or chocolate and every single box was empty and there was just like a full thing of Hershey bars, I'd just walk out and go to the next gas station.
Part of Hershey's selling so well, I'm telling you, is s'mores.
Well, that's fun.
No, but that's fine. But it needs help. That's the whole point. For it to flourish, it needs help.
Well, you know, you saying this doesn't prove anything. Like, it's saying, how much are we selling in s'mores every year? Like, is the s'more industry a $100 million industry that I'm unaware about? Because
it might be.
I don't know how much camping people are doing and making s'mores.
How much are like graham crackers getting in revenue? Well, because people probably aren't eating graham crackers.
You would think that, Sam, but that's wrong. I have graham crackers. That's one of the snacks I like. So
shocker,
you're wrong.
Shocker. I was just going to say, I bet you eat graham crackers.
Graham crackers are good. What do you mean?
I can't hate on it. Graham crackers aren't bad.
You guys didn't like Teddy Grahams growing up? Like, I'm too old for Teddy Grahams, but I still like me a graham cracker from time to time.
I'll dip a graham cracker in some peanut butter. I'm not psychotic. But like, I don't think people are. You know, I think graham crackers are getting bought mainly because it's like, oh, you know, we'll have a little campfire. We'll do some s'mores.
Maybe your better argument would be like the marshmallow industry.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
The next thing we're going to hear from you is, you want to hear about a great snack? For me, the snack is premium saltines.
you throw some peanut butter on there. That's a fine snack,
but
too.
It needs help. That's the point. Can't just eat them straight.
The Twix is a whole bunch of things that need help to come together to still
beautiful symphony. That's what
it's a beautiful symphony, but still fails to live up to the other things ahead of it.
It's a beautiful symphony.
It's a rut that's had to come together that still isn't as good. It's Kentucky basketball, all these freshmen coming together that still aren't as good. but. Don't exactly me. My point wasn't finished.
Here you go, Foster Corley. Plain ass chocolate can go to hell.
Hell yeah, Foster.
It needs some caramel in the middle. And as for ice cream, chocolate is the worst.
If you think chocolate ice cream is the worst,
yeah, I can't get behind that.
You ruin your whole argument there.
I can't get behind
that. You guys go too far. It's the same concept. That's like saying, well, vanilla ice cream needs help. This is my Bob voice. Vanilla ice cream needs help because sometimes you throw Oreos in it and sometimes you throw Reese cups in it and other flavors. Yeah, but you know what? The vanilla is still good, Bob. The chocolate ice cream is still great. Do sometimes you want to spruce it up and get a different feel? Sure, I acknowledge that. Just like, you know, just sometimes I don't want a sausage biscuit. Sometimes I want egg on my sausage biscuit. Sometimes I want a little cheese on my hamburger. It doesn't mean that the actual just hamburger patty isn't delicious.
I would argue that, like, eating a Hershey's bar plain is just like eating a bun. It's like making a burger and just taking the
chicken fingers are delicious. But I like putting a little barbecue sauce and honey mustard on them from time to time. It needs help. Every food is better with a little help, okay? Just like all of us as individuals, Bob, we're stronger with a little help, okay?
There you go. Okay, Dylan Vall 16 is on your side. I love the Hershey bar, John. They're underrated.
Thank you, Dylan Vall. That's a listener I can get behind right there. I don't need the confirmation, but it's nice to know.
Need the confirmation, but when it's in my corner, I'll take it.
No, you know, I'm just saying that there's a guy that, you know, I trust his takes more than Foster. That's all I'm saying.
So now you're legitimizing other opinions based on your own.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Were just saying that you don't need other people's validation, but you just got validation.
Well, let's just take what you just said. Me legitimizing versus me needing are not the same thing, Sam. Me saying that I
have to move in the goalposts.
It's not moving the goalposts. I don't need opinions. If 100 people told me I was wrong, the one person telling me I'm right doesn't make me feel more confident in my take.
It just sounded like it did.
No, it didn't. I'm legitimizing.
You said he's smart.
Yes, I'm giving him confirmation. You see the difference? I'm giving Dylan confirmation. Like, yeah, Dylan, you're smart. Dylan,
my opinion is right. Yeah.
No. Dylan, your opinion's right. Now, our opinions happen to line up, but your opinion's right, Dylan.
Yeah.
I already know mine's right.
Okay.
I already know my opinion's right. I don't need Dylan to tell me my opinion's right. But, Dylan, good job by you being on the right side of this.
Houston Crest jumped into the conversation. He's a fan of Reese's Sticks.
Okay.
Which I have to say, those are kind of Kit Kat-y, but peanut buttery, and those are all right.
It feels like we're starting to get into some niche categories here, though.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, I got to be honest, I don't try the Reese's variations because I don't need to. The original's so good. Now, you know, that doesn't get, don't get me wrong, you know, Easter eggs, I'll eat the eggs, and, you know, the specialty, like, Christmas tree Reese's, I dabble with those. I count those as part of the same crew, but.
I just had some around Easter. I had some of the eggs, and the thing I worry about with the eggs is it's almost too much peanut butter. It gets a little oily sometimes.
Not if you put it in the fridge.
Yeah.
Put it in the fridge, it holds it all together.
Yeah.
Got to put Reese's in the fridge, yeah.
Yeah.
I like all chocolate in the fridge. Yeah, but I appreciate Dylan weighing in, you know.
And we're getting some love on the Nerds Clusters on the Discord, too.
Chocolate in the fridge and candy in the freezer.
Well, I've never put anything in the freezer.
Just for a little bit, a little flash freeze.
What do you mean candy in the freezer? Just like Nerds in the freezer?
I'll put those Sour Punch Bites.
Oh, see, I don't dabble with the sour stuff.
Yeah, sour candy's my...
Gummies, I've never been a gummy guy. Like the
sour candy's my wheelhouse.
You know, like in kindergarten, that was what the teacher used to try to like throw a carrot out for us. Was like, we got 5 gummy bears, and you had one each day. So if you were bad a day, you lost a gummy bear. Oh. So, like, you know, the goal was to get to the end of the week with 5 gummy bears. So, like, you know, as a kid, I was like, oh, it's gummy bear time. But, like, after I got out of kindergarten, I was like, okay, I'm done with gummies in general. And the sour stuff, sour worms. The kids who like the sour worms were always the ones that acted up a lot in school. So I judged them. They usually didn't have any teeth. They had silver teeth. And it was just bouncing off the wall everywhere. I never dabbled with those. And just while we're on the subject, before we move on, Houston, I appreciate him weighing in with the Reese's Sticks. But right now, I'm a little weary of Houston's taste. Because I've been judging him. As we're now all working here in the same office, he'll come in with this full bag of just Chex Mix. And, like, I just feel like that's...
Normal? Like, is it the flavor-enhanced one or whatever?
I don't know what it is.
The black bag or the...
But I just feel like actually bringing Chex Mix and munching on it is just... To me, it's weird. Mm. I like Chex Mix, like, if it's, like, got the special, like, holiday... You put some, you know, frosting on it, and it's all mixing together. Like, that I could do with. You know,
frosting.
Like, call it, like, puppy chow or whatever. You put some vanilla drizzle on it, it all sticks together and all that. You know, like that.
Houston's, if he's eating just normal Chex Mix, he's clearly made a mistake. Gardetto's is the real Chex Mix out there.
If it's a homemade Chex Mix, though, it might have some, like, Worcestershire in it and some stuff to kind of punch it a little. That's not bad.
If he's eating the normal blue bag of Chex Mix, I would be concerned. That's just, that's like...
Bold Chex Mix,
yeah,
Sam.
That's
actually what... And that's what Houston just said. And that's
I can get on with that.
I like the bold Chex Mix myself.
See, we
become
got,
a Gardetto's guy.
We
though,
got
Houston.
Three weird
that's two,
snackers.
You're like my father-in-law, man. He you know, like, get a taco and puts a bit of salsa on it. He's like, it's too spicy. It's like too much.
Well, I'm not saying the Chex Mix is too spicy. I'm just saying that it's just it's a bad snack. That's all I'm saying. All
right.
It's a bad snack. But I don't like spicy food either, really. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. Tonight, the last round of NBA play-in games.
It's kind of a buzzkill with some of these big names out, right?
Yeah, the two biggest names out. Zion out for the Pelicans. Jimmy Butler out for the Heat. You say it's a buzzkill. I don't necessarily disagree. It's also a little bit of a buzzkill that I don't think either one of these teams are winning next series anyways.
Yeah, I agree. They're saying Caruso may be out for the Bulls, too.
Yeah, so. He's got a bad ankle sprain. I'd be shocked if he played.
Yeah. I'm not even sure how much I'll – since we're off for the weekend, I'm not sure how much of these games I'll watch tonight, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a Friday night as well, so I'm not gonna – I probably won't really be tuned in either. I'll be out and about, bouncing around, doing things, eating ice cream hopefully at some point. That'd be nice if I can get some chocolate ice cream tonight. But – And then also, like, the playoffs actually start on Saturday. So, like, we'll be talking about game ones coming in on Monday, not the what happened in the play-in tournament on Friday.
I know there's some people who don't love the NBA like we do, but I love this opening weekend usually. You know, four games Saturday, four games Sunday. Just off and running. That'll be fun. Which matchups, pick one in the East, one in the West, which ones intrigue you the most?
I will say before we get to that tonight, I do still like the Pelicans without Zion. I just think they're a terrible matchup for the Kings just size-wise. They got so much more size than the Kings. So I'm a little surprised that the Kings are road favorites in New Orleans. If you're looking to maybe put a little bet in, your good friend Uncle Johnny, he likes the Pelicans tonight. But in terms of on Saturday, you got Magic, Cavs, Suns, T-Wolves, 76ers, Knicks, Lakers, Nuggets. I mean – Lakers-Nuggets is intriguing just because it's LeBron James going up against Nikola Jokic. But, like, in terms of the series that's the most coin flip, like, 76ers-Knicks, that was a even line when it came to series odds on that. The 76ers are not your typical 7 seed. Kind of sucks for the Knicks that they have such a magical year. And the reward is they play Joel Embiid and a 76ers team that actually has a coach that knows how to kind of work matchups in the playoffs, because Doc Rivers isn't very good at that, but Nick Nurse has proven that he can coach in the playoffs, of course, winning a championship with that Raptors team. So the Sixers-Knicks is probably the series I'm most into. As far as game one goes, I mean, like, the Knicks are going to have a great crowd. That'll be a fun game, but I do think the Sixers win that series eventually.
It's interesting. I think it's what Paul Reed or whoever the reserve center on the Sixers is saying, yeah, we wanted to make sure we played the Knicks. They're easier than the Celtics. It was like,
Well, it's true.
It's true. You just don't need to say it.
If you're the Knicks, you can't even really get that mad about it. It's not like they like lost the last couple games of the season because, hey, we wanted you. Kind of like how teams tried to do, you know, years ago. I think it was the Clippers were trying to do that, and they ended up, you know, to get out of the Lakers in the second round. They lost so they could get maybe – I think it was whenever they played the Clippers in the or the Nuggets in the bubble and lost that series. But yeah, like, it's true, the Celtics are much better than the Knicks. I don't know if they could even be mad about that. But that's the series I'm looking forward to the most. Joel Embiid, the best player in that series, but Jalen Brunson's been pretty special, and you know, can he drum up some magic? And MSG should be rocking.
True. True. For me, I think I'm most interested. I'm a little biased, obviously, in the East. That Pacers-Bucks series is very interesting to me. Pacers got to make some hay up early if they want to win that series with Giannis out a game or two. I still like Mavs-Clippers, depending upon what Kawhi's status is. That could be a really great series.
Yeah, the Clippers, you know, they're doing the thing where they're like, hey, we're not really going to talk about Kawhi, but hey, the knee's just been unpredictable. Sometimes it swells up, sometimes it's not. We don't know if he's playing game one or not. So
said he got injected with something.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Okay, I missed that update.
Let me try and find
it. So that makes it sound like he's at least trying to play. You know, if you're Kawhi, at a certain point you can't keep resting your legs and resting your body because of your career and having more years in your career. Because at a certain point, you look up and you're 33, 34 years old, and like, your career is right here in front of you, and like you only have a couple more cracks at being an elite player and trying to win another championship. So I would really like to see Kawhi try to tough it out and play. As far as that Pacers-Bucks series you talk about, like it's not that different than what I said about, you know, the Sixers with Nick Nurse. I think the Pacers are kind of in that similar position where Rick Carlisle has shown he can coach in the postseason, right? You know, yeah. With the deep runs in Dallas and winning that championship there, the deep runs with, you know, those Pacers teams in the 2000s. Like, you know, I think Carlisle has shown he can coach. And on the other side is Doc Rivers, you know? So, like, you're looking at that and you're saying, hey, a banged-up Doc Rivers with an unathletic team and a Damian Lillard experiment that hasn't gone as well as we hoped. Like, yeah, if you're the Pacers, you're looking and thinking you should win that series.
I agree. I'd just love to see the Pacers. It'd just be progress to win a first-round series. I don't see them doing much more than that, but it would be good to have that happen. The last question I have on NBA is, do we feel, is it overstating it, saying, you know, because there's so much hype surrounding the Celtics now, and for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, is this kind of, I don't want to say now or never, but they're kind of getting to a point where they really need to deliver, right?
I would say that if we're doing a pressure power ranking, which maybe we can do next week, we didn't really get to do a full preview of the NBA because the play-in tournament does kind of change the math on that, as you don't even know who two of the games are on Sunday. But if I'm doing a pressure power ranking, I would say Jason Tatum probably only trailing Joe Mazzulla, his head coach, in terms of who's under the most pressure in this postseason, just because, yeah, like you said, not necessarily now or never, but it's like, hey, if you can't do it this year, are you going to be able to do it? So I start having those questions. Could you actually do it? Could you actually win? Because they got the best team,
yeah,
I think, by far. At the very least, they should kind of cakewalk through the East. And if they lose to Denver in a classic series, maybe like you live with that. But otherwise, like, it's been a colossal failure.
I would agree with that. I don't see how they don't get to the finals, but I thought that last year too. So,
Pacers favored in their series, by the way, Bob. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't.
-132, so slight favorites. And, of course, Giannis's health, a big part of that. But Pacers projected to win that series. A couple of the lower-seeded teams projected to win. The Suns supposed to beat the Timberwolves. The Mavericks supposed to beat the Clippers. We talked about the 76ers and Knicks being a coin flip. So if you like upsets, at least numbers-wise, you might get a couple of those. Last call on the other side.
A brand built in ten.
Get ready for it. Get ready for it.
Last call here on the program as we wrap up this week of shows. It's been a fun week. Not taking them for granted. I know we've been frustrated with the transfer portal and having to talk about it and do updates without having real updates because no one really knows. But it has been nice to still have stuff to talk about. So I'm not taking them for granted. Thank you, NFL Draft and NBA playoffs. And we'll get some more portal news, I'm sure. And the Tennessee baseball team for a top five matchup. Because I've been doing radio for a long time in Knoxville, and sometimes when the basketball season ended, it was just dead. It was over. And usually you didn't even make it to the end of basketball season with people really caring. It was about early February when people quit caring, and you're trying to drum up some football conversation. So I don't take it for granted. Bob, your best and worst of the week.
Best of the week, and it does kind of involve the transfer portal, is Pat Kelsey at Louisville is doing some things. The new head basketball coach there, while things are, I don't know, melting down's overstating it for Big Blue Nation, but they with Reed Shepard announcing he's going pro, making that a formality, at this point, they're starting from scratch. Meanwhile, Louisville is, and Pat Kelsey are saying, let's get moving. They went after and got the big guy from BYU that supposedly seemed like a lock to go to Kentucky. Khalifa is his last name. They got him. I think it's Ali Khalifa. And then also They now supposedly are making legitimate and serious contact with Jaden Quaintance, who is one of the decommits from Kentucky. So Louisville's got a long way to go, but I feel like they've got things on the right track with Pat Kelsey. He's viewing this as an opportunity for sure. He's not waiting around to see what Kentucky's going to do. So good for him. My worst of the week, it's almost like a no-brainer. It's Greg Doyle. Just everything about him. And now, you know, the stuff that's coming out, of course, you know, we know that Twitter or Twix, as Jack Foster called it, lasts forever. There's stuff coming out all the way back from 2010. This is one he wrote for the record. This is Greg Doyle, by the way. We know about the Caitlin Clark stuff that's been well chronicled this week. For the record, this was a tweet he put out in 2010. For the record, if I'm ranking sexy body parts, feet don't make the top 10. Or another one. Did you see the underage hooker of Frank Ribery? She looked 22, but was beautiful as hell. I mean, there's just, this is a journalist, man. It's a journalist who had a national footprint for a while. Now he's got a national footprint again, but again, for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, that was my best of the week, was just him getting dunked on, just because I've hated that guy for 15 years now. So it was nice to see everyone come around and be like, oh yeah, this guy does suck. My worst of the week, I got to go with Deion Sanders yesterday. What a weird press conference he had whenever he is trying to make reporters look dumb by saying they don't know what they're talking about because they don't watch practice. And they're like, yeah, you don't let us watch practice. And he's like, yeah, amen. But then it's like doubling down, like about they're asked about guys in the transfer portal. He's like, we're good. Those guys that left. He's basically like, those guys suck. Like, we're not worried about losing anybody. We're good. We're good. Something he would say to people, I'm going to say to him, Deion, keep that same energy this fall. Whenever y'all are 4-8 and you're complaining about lack of depth and lack of players, keep that same energy, because you're telling me right now you're good. You're good. Keep that same energy. Sam?
My best of the week, I had Paul Skeens. He is just absolutely dominating AAA right now. So far, 12 2/3, only given up 5 hits, 27 strikeouts, and 4 walks. I think it's only a matter of time before he gets called up. I saw something, I don't know if this is true or not, but people think that they're waiting for Livy Dunn to get done with her gymnastics season before they call up Paul Skeens to the major leagues. I thought that was funny. And then my worst of the weekend, I've had Florida Gators baseball. They are 19-18 on the season, 7-9 in SEC play, and they have an absolute gauntlet coming up. They've got Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Georgia still left on their SEC schedule, and 7-9. Things not looking good down in Gainesville.
Yeah, and they got a tough schedule coming up too.
Yeah, hardest teams in the SEC.
Yeah, they're not gonna make the tournament. Like they're gonna finish under 500, even maybe.
They gotta win the SEC tournament, pretty much.
All right, fan run open. Sam, on the way out, you feeling confident? You feeling good? Your team getting the win? I've heard a lot about your golf.
Yeah, I'm feeling confident. It's one of my buddy's birthdays tonight, so I'm going to hope that I'm feeling good in the morning. But ooh. I'm still supremely confident in my game. I've gotten to the range a couple times. My boy Tucker Harlan's been out there grinding this week. Feel good about Houston. Feel good about Julia. Marcus on the bag. I don't know.
Sharps take note, though. Sam may be
maybe
a little off in the morning.
Yeah, first couple holes, maybe.
The G.I. Jake Show coming up next.